Welcome, and thank you for standing by for today's conference call. At this time, I need to remind all participants that you're in a listen-only mode for the duration of the call. At this time, I need to remind parties today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections to this recording, disconnect now. I'm going to turn the call over to Ms. Brenda Stewart. Ma'am, you can begin.
Thank you, operator, and good afternoon to everyone that's joined us today. I am Brenda Stewart, and I will be serving as your moderator. I'd like to welcome you to our fourth installment of OFCCP's Moving Toward Compliance series. Now, throughout this series, we've been covering a variety of topics related to the recent changes to the regulation. These include the Vietnam-era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act as amended, or better known as VEVRA, as well as Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, also known as Section 503. During today's training, the presenters will cover information on the Equal Opportunity Clause, better known as the EO Clause, under the new VEVRA and Section 503 regulations. In addition, they will discuss the expectations in terms of listing jobs under the Section 503 final rules. Before I introduce today's speakers, I'd like to go over a few housekeeping items. First, questions can only be submitted through the WebEx chat panel, and please ensure you direct them to all panelists. The questions can be submitted at any time throughout this presentation, and our panel of subject matter experts will be reviewing the questions and preparing responses so that they can be discussed at the conclusion of the presentation. For those that need closed captioning services, please maximize the media viewer window so that you can see live transcribing. Next slide. We have two presenters joining us today, and you should be able to see them right now on our camera. Ebony Ross in the lovely green is an equal opportunity specialist in OFCCP's branch of regulatory, legislative, and policy development. As an EOS, Ebony conducts extensive research and analysis on regulatory and policy-related issues and also provides training to staff, contractors, and members of the public on topics surrounding the laws that OFCCP enforces, including today's topic on the new VEVRA and Section 503 regulations. She received her law degree from Howard University School of Law and her Bachelor of Arts in English from Hampton University. Welcome, Ebony. Lynn White is a program analyst in OFCCP's branch of planning and program development. As a program analyst, Lynn wears several hats, including regulatory development and analysis and training. Lynn also received her degree from Howard University School of Law, and she will be acting as our hiring official in today's presentation. Welcome, Lynn. Today's panel of subject matter experts includes Naomi Levin, the Branch Chief for Policy, and Keir Bickerstaff and Susan Chastain, Senior Attorneys from DOL's Solicitor's Office. Welcome to everyone, and now I'll turn the presentation over to Lynn to get us started.
Thank you so much, Brenda. And I want to thank OFCCP for putting together this fabulous training series on moving toward compliance to the Section 503 and VEVRA final rules. We received an excellent introduction to the new data collection requirements under the rules. We also received a thorough and comprehensive overview of all of the affirmative action program requirements under Section 503 and VEVRA, including the new provisions. And I definitely want to thank you for posting those on your internet so we can go back to them whenever we have follow-up questions. I'm really excited to learn more from you today, Ebony, about the new Equal Opportunity Clause requirements and the mandatory job listing. And we are on the edge of our seats waiting for that Goals and Benchmarks training next week on March 6th. So thank you very much, and let's get started with this training.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
Next slide.
All right. Well, thank you, Lynn, again, you know, for those wonderful compliments. We really appreciate it here. But before we begin, I want to discuss today's objectives. Now, as you know, we've done a series of these trainings, and the goal of today's training is to help federal contractors and subcontractors understand how to comply with the Section 503 and VEBRA EO clause. And so that training includes the mandatory, next slide, please. No, I'm sorry, this slide. The mandatory job listing requirements under VEBRA, the information that contractors must provide to the Employment Service Delivery Systems, or, you know, ESDS under VEBRA, how to post notices of rights for employees who work off-site and for applicants, what to include in job solicitations and advertisements, and how to incorporate the EO clause into subcontracts. Now, you know, as you heard Brenda say, we're also going to talk about how job listings relate to Section 503 and the outreach and recruitment obligations. Next slide, please. Now, I know that you all are looking at your monitors like, okay, OFCCP, you include this slide in every presentation that you do. Well, that's because the dates are dates to remember. I mean, they're super significant. And as you all are well aware now, we published the VEBRA and Section 503 final rules on September 24, 2013, and we're very proud of that. Okay? Now, the next date that's very important to remember is March 24, 2014, and you know, I know that you all have said that date with me because that's the date that the rules do what, Lynn?
Become effective.
Exactly.
That you guys have really hit that home.
Okay. Well, great. I'm glad that we did that for you. Now, another important date is that contractors need to remember, and you know, Lynn, your company needs to remember, is your next affirmative action program cycle date after the effective rule. Now, as you know, we said in previous webinars that contractors who have an affirmative action program in place on March 24, 2014, they can maintain that, okay? They can maintain that AAP. However, they must come into compliance with the affirmative action program requirements under the final rule on their next affirmative action program cycle after the rule effective, the rule's effective date, which is
March 24th, 2014.
Very good. Now, enough about this subpart C stuff and this phase in compliance. Today we're going to talk about a new subpart, subpart A. And subpart C, like I said, is phase in compliance. But under subpart A, contractors must begin complying with those obligations on the rules effective date.
March 24th, 2014.
Correct. Next slide, please. Now, before we begin discussing what has changed under the EO clause, I want to, you know, give a little context. Now, Lynn, I remember you asked me previously on a technical assistance call, Ebony, what notices, you know, does OFCCP refer to in those EO clauses? You know, you were saying, I understand that, you know, that contractors are supposed to notify applicants and employees of their EEO rights, and they're supposed to state, you know, their obligations. But what does that mean? What are you talking about? And I'm here to tell you, Lynn, and everyone else out there who had a question about that, the notices that we are referring to is the notices that are provided on the EEO is the law poster.
Absolutely. We already put those up, but now it looks like you're asking us to do more with them.
Well, you also know that that we jointly have this poster with the EEOC. So not only will you see laws on that poster that OFCCP enforces, but also the EEOC.
Okay. Are there other notices that we have to worry about?
Well, yeah, Lynn, there are other notices, but for today's purposes, we're only focused on the notices that are on the EEO as the law poster, because those are the notices that are referred to in the VEBRA and Section 503 clause. I mean, yeah, there's that Executive Order 13496 where federal contractors are required to notify their employees of their rights to bargain collectively and engage in concerted, you know, protected activity. And there are also other notices, you know, from other federal agencies, such as the Wage and Hour Division, but we're not going to talk about that, you know, for today's purposes.
Okay.
All right? Next slide, please. Now that we have gotten that out of the way, let's talk about what has changed under the VEBRA and Section 503 EO clauses. Now, as you all know, that currently under Section 503 and VEBRA, we have a suggestion in the regulations that says, you know, read the notice to an individual with a disability, or maybe, you know, post it lower so someone in a wheelchair can see it. Well, that suggestion is outdated. I mean, it's outdated. So the final rule, it changes that, and it replaces that outdated suggestion with the one to provide the notice in Braille or large print versions. Post a copy at a lower height so that someone with a wheelchair, you know, can view it, him or herself. And it also makes it easier for that, you know, the individual with such a disability to read it him or herself.
And we certainly agree that that language makes it more relevant to today's processes. But at what point in the hiring process are we supposed to provide the alternative version of the notice?
Well, Lynn, I'm glad you asked that question. And the answer is upon request. At the same time, you know, in the process that you would notify applicants without disability of the notice.
Okay.
Okay? Next slide, please. Okay, so now we're going to discuss the electronic posting of notices for employees working off-site. And what the final rule does, it now allows contractors to electronically post a notice for those individuals who don't work at the physical location. For example, in the context of teleworking. Now, contractors may do this by meeting either one or two conditions. The first one is to provide employees with computers or access to computers that can actually access the electronic notice, okay? The other option is to have actual knowledge that the employees can access the notice.
Well, Ebony, when you say actual knowledge, mm-hmm. are you saying that I have to know that employees access the notice?
That's a great question, and no, I'm not saying that. Actual knowledge means that the employees could access it, not that they actually did.
Well, can you give me an example so I can know how this would work practically?
Definitely. One thing that you could do is post a notice on your intranet page conspicuously and in a format that it could be readily seen by employees, or you can email it to employees.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
It does.
Great.
That was a great example. Thank you.
No problem. Next slide, please. Okay. Now, another change the final rules make to the EO clauses are the electronic posting of applicants for, the electronic posting of rights for applicants. Now, basically what that does is that it says that if you are going to use an electronic application process, then you must also post a notice electronically informing applicants of their EO rights. Okay? And it also states that the notice must be conspicuously start with or as a part of the electronic application.
Okay, Ebony, I get this because mm-hmm. we as contractors know that job applicants have to know about their rights too,
mm-hmm.
but the regulations require us to conspicuously store the EEO law as the poster with or as part of an electronic
mm-hmm.
application. Does this mean that the actual physical or electronic copy of the poster must be individually stored with the application because it's really long and it's big and it can make the application a little cumbersome?
You're right, and Lynn, I also want to take this opportunity to plug the FAQs that we have on our website. Now, under those and under the Federal Contractors Workers Corner, mm-hmm. you can find the poster, but the poster is actually available in different sizes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's one thing.
Okay.
And, you know, back to your question, even though what you suggest, I mean, that's a great idea. That would definitely satisfy the requirement, but it's not required. You know, contractors aren't required to do that.
Okay.
You know, you can choose to satisfy this requirement in any way that ensures that the electronic applicant has the opportunity to view the poster so that he or she may understand what his or her rights are. For example, you could display the poster using a prominent link on your website.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, include a description of what the link connects to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
No problem. Next slide, please. Okay. So now let's discuss the contractor solicitations and advertisements. Now, if you read the regulations, you know now that the Section 503 EO clause is now a tad bit longer. The final rule, yes, the final rule as a new paragraph 7 that requires contractors to state in all solicitations or advertisements that they will receive, that all qualified applicants with disabilities will receive consideration for employment and will not be discriminated against on the basis of that disability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, the VEBRA final rule requires contractors to state in solicitations and advertisements that it is an equal opportunity employer of protected veterans. Now, this can be done by simply adding veteran status or something similar to an existing equal opportunity employer statement. Okay? Now, Lynn, I want you to understand something about these requirements. The purpose, the reason we did this is because we want job seekers and the public to understand that individuals with disabilities and protected veterans, they are entitled to non-discrimination and affirmative action in the workplaces of federal contractors. And I'm sure that you've heard us say, you know, that having a federal contract is a privilege and not a right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also, I want to ask you something. Did you know that a comparable clause also exists in Executive Order 11246?
I did, Ebony. I did know that. And, you know, a lot of contractors already have a pretty detailed EEO tagline requirement. For example, my company, we use D and V respectively for individuals with disabilities or veterans. Is that sufficient for OFCCP?
Oh, no, ma'am, that is not. You know, using D and V, that's actually inadequate. You know, individuals with disabilities and protected veterans, they need to know who you are referring to in your tagline. So D&V could be David and Victor. It could be Dorothy and Valerie. So you should put something, you know, at a minimum, say disability or vet, so that job seekers know who you are referring to.
And, Ebony, we want those applications from those veterans and those individuals with disabilities, so this is a good provision. But I know what I think solicitations mean.
Okay.
What does OFCCP mean when they say solicitations?
That's a great question, Lynn. And OFCCP has broadly construed solicitations to include job listings, announcements, and advertisements.
Okay.
All right, does that clear that up for you?
That's very clear. Thank you.
Next slide, please. Okay, so when let's discuss now the inclusion of the Section 503 EO clause in subcontracts. Now, I want to, you know, take a moment to talk about what's required currently under the rules. Now, you know that, you know, you as a contractor, you have an option. You can to put the EO clause into your subcontract verbatim. However, under the current rule, if you don't want to do that verbatim, you can incorporate it by reference simply by citing to 41 CFR 60-741.5A, which is the provision of the regulation that actually contains the Section 503 EO clause. But do you see the problem with this?
Well, Ebony, I see how it could be a problem. It's not a problem for me because I happen to know what this provision means.
Okay.
But if you don't know what 41 CFR 60-741.5A means,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't say anything.
Right, exactly. And so the final rule wanted to change that.
Okay.
We wanted to change that. We want contractors and federal contractors to know the nature of their obligations under these rules.
Okay.
So as a result, what we have done to remedy that problem is required that you not only cite to the EO clause, but you also include this text that you see on the monitor here immediately after that citation in bold print. And do you mind reading that for everyone, Lynn?
No, I don't mind. This contractor and subcontractor shall abide by the requirements of 41 CFR 60-741.5A.
Mm-hmm.
This regulation prohibits discrimination against qualified individuals on the basis of disability and requires affirmative action by covered prime contractors and subcontractors to employ and advance in employment qualified individuals with disabilities. And, Ebony, I mean, that is definitely a lot more clear about what this statute really requires
right.
us to do.
You win.
But let me pose a hypothetical to you.
Okay.
Suppose that my company enters into a subcontract on March 25th, 2014,
mm-hmm.
and the EO clause is made part of the subcontract just by citation to 41 CFR 60-741.5A. Am I in compliance? Is this going to be a violation I might be cited for?
Okay, Lynn. Now, based on the information that you gave me, there, you know, this does appear to be a violation. Remember that the EO clause is under section 503 is a part of subpart A of our rules. And subpart A of our rules are effective on March 24th, 2014. So, Lynn, if your company has entered into a contract on the date after the rules become effective and only cite to the Section 503 EO clause without including this text on the page in bold right after that citation, that's a problem. However, you know, we understand that, you know, these are new rules, but this sounds like a perfect opportunity for some technical assistance. So if you aren't sure about what to do on that date, give us a call.
Absolutely. And before you put a red flag up, we have been working on coming into compliance since the rules were published.
Oh, I know you have. All right, so next, let's talk about the inclusion. Next slide, please. Let's talk about the inclusion of the VEVRA EO clause in subcontracts. And just like Section 503, we did the same thing because we had the same problem. Contractors, just citing to the EO clause, it did little to notify contractors and subcontractors of the nature of their affirmative action and equal employment obligations under these rules. So, again, if you are going to enter into, you know, a subcontract, remember the final rules require you on March 24th, 2014 and thereafter to put this text that you see on this screen here in bold immediately following the citation to the VEVRA EO clause.
Okay.
And can you, you know, read that for us, Lynn?
All right. This contractor and subcontractor shall abide by the requirements of 41 CFR 60-300.5A. This regulation prohibits discrimination against qualified protected veterans and requires affirmative action by covered prime contractors and subcontractors to employ and advance in employment qualified protected veterans. Now, Ebony, I have had this question myself, and a couple of other of my contractor friends, we've been talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And can we combine these two EO clauses? Because they're kind of the same, but they have different meanings, and we understand the purpose of that.
Well, then, you know what? I'm glad you asked. We heard you. We have heard you, which is why we have posted an FAQ on that very topic on our webpage. Next slide, please. Now, Lynn, and everyone else out there, if you look on your monitor, this slide says live screen. And what it's going to do is take us to the frequently asked questions, which we often update and which we hope that you often go and take a look at. We have Mr. Ivan Brown here navigating for us. Right now, what you see on the screen is OFCCP's webpage. Okay, and then Ivan is going to click on Section 503, under Read the Latest Section 503 in VEVRA FAQs, the second bullet. And there we go. You see here, these are the frequently asked questions for the Section 503 final rule. Now, if Ivan scrolls down the page, you're going to see that our FAQs are broken down into different subcategories. He's going to scroll down to the category that talks about the Equal Opportunity Clause. And there we have it. Now, Lynn, you asked whether the VEVRA and Section 503 EO clauses could be combined. Now, I want Ivan to click on that link so that we can find out what the answer to that question is. Oh, thank you, Ivan. So, Lynn, you tell me, can the clauses be combined?
Wow. Well, it looks like, yes, contractors can combine these two EO incorporation by reference clauses, provided that the combined clause is set in bold text, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and the prescribed content of both clauses is preserved. And you even provided a great example. And I have to thank you for these frequently asked questions, because we do have many, and it's great to know that there's this resource here that we can refer to just as often as we refer to the training.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much, and I'll definitely let my other colleagues know how much you appreciate, you know, and what we've done and all the great compliments. And, you know, I want to add something, Lynn. Not only can you combine the Section 503 and EO clause, but if Ivan clicks on question two, or you look down at question two on your page, if you want to, you can also combine all of the clauses. That includes Executive Order 11246 EO clause, Section 503, and VEPR. I mean, we give you that option.
This is excellent, Ebony, because this gives us an opportunity to make sure that our subcontractors know how committed we are to enforcing these,
mm-hmm.
to implementing these obligations, but it also saves space because our contracts can get kind of long.
Right, I know. All right, next slide, please. And we're going to give Ivan a little time to navigate away from this page. All right, next slide. Now, let's talk about mandatory job listings and Section 503.
Well, Ebony, I don't mean to interrupt you, but let me ask real quick. Are contractors required to list jobs with employment service delivery systems, one-stop career centers, or form linkage agreements under the Section 503 final rule? Because I know there was some discussion about that
mm-hmm.
when the rule was being developed.
Lynn, you know what? I am so glad you asked me that question, and I'm sure you're not the only one out there with that question. It's the million-dollar question. So let me answer it for you. No, there is no mandatory job listing requirement under Section 503. And, you know, I just want to explain where the confusion has come in.
Okay.
So when we proposed the Section 503 final rule, we proposed to have contractors enter into a minimum of 3 linkage agreements and to post their jobs with, one-stop career centers. Okay? Well, after reading, considering comments from the public, we decided not to do that and to just stick with the current language that we already had in the regulations, which deals with appropriate outreach and recruitment activities. And we also added a suggested list of resources
mm-hmm.
in that part of the rule. So, no, there's no Section 503 mandatory job listing requirement under Section 503.
Thank you for
yes.
clearing that up, Ebony.
Yep. Yeah, you're just required to engage in appropriate outreach and recruitment activities.
Okay.
Thank you. Next slide. Okay, now let's talk about the mandatory job listing requirement under VEPRA. Okay. Now, Lynn, there is one under VEPRA.
Absolutely.
And it's not purely a regulatory creation. It's actually required in the statute itself.
Okay.
So contractors have always been required to list their jobs with employment service delivery systems.
Okay.
Now, in 2002, VEBRA was amended. And when VEBRA was amended, it just says that contractors could list their jobs with American job banks or, you know, some other national job banks prescribed by DOL. But this was not in and of itself sufficient to satisfy that requirement. So what we did and what the final rule clarified is the contractors, you know, our longstanding policy that contractors must provide its job listing information to the ESCSs in a format that is permitted by the appropriate ESCS. What we also require contractors to do is to indicate on their job listings their status as a federal contractor and their desire for priority referral for protected veterans. Now,
well, Ebony, this is a smart change because as a contractor, the one thing I don't want to happen
mm-hmm.
is to spend the time sending out my job listings and them not even be useful.
Right.
They help me get applicants from protected veterans. But could you provide me a practical example
mm-hmm.
of how the contractor is required to post its information, the job listing information, with the appropriate ESCS?
Oh, not a problem, Lynn. For example, if the ESCS ASCS requires electronic transmission through a web-based form. You can provide it in that way. If the ESCS wants it through mail, fax, or email, you provide it in those ways. The goal is for you to provide the employment service delivery system that information in the way that they need it so that it can be readily and easily understood.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But now, how would I indicate it's sufficient for OFCCP
mm-hmm.
that I'm a federal contractor on the job listing? What all am I going to have to go through to do that?
Okay, Lynn, that's an excellent question. And you can simply do that, for example, by putting VEBRA federal contractor on your job listing.
Okay, that's not overly burdensome.
Nope. Next slide, please. Now, we're still talking about the mandatory job listing requirement, and the final rule requires something else. It requires contractors to provide contact information for the official that's responsible for hiring at each hiring location who can verify the information in the job listing. Additionally, Lynn, if you decide to use some external job search organization to help you list your job, that contact information must also be provided to the employment service delivery system. Because remember, you know, the point is to employ protected veterans who are qualified. And so in order for the ESCS to effectively do their job, they need to have accurate information, and they need to be able to contact someone if they have questions about, you know, the job listing information.
And we certainly have people on staff who, that's their job, is to make sure that we get these applications in.
Right. And before you, I know you have a question for me, and before you ask that question, I also want to provide, you know, somewhat of a temporal scope. So this contact information must be provided to the ESDS at the same time that you list the job.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for making that point. But, you know, you said that we have to provide the contact information for the contractor official responsible for hiring at each hiring location
mm-hmm.
who can verify the information. Well, what type of official are you looking for on that listing?
Oh, Lynn, I mean, you have a couple of options. It can be a senior management contact, a HR official, or any appropriate official who can verify the information.
Okay, so the maintenance official won't do.
Right. Next slide. Oh, wow. So that brings us to the end of this presentation on the Section 503 and VEBRA EO clause. Now, Leah, I want to ensure that you got what it was that OFCCP is trying to convey. So could you please wrap this up for us?
I'd be happy to, Ebony. And I really enjoyed this presentation. It was a great discrete topic to really dig into. One of the first things I've learned and most important is if I have questions, your website is a great resource.
Mm-hmm.
I can check the FAQs out to find out information, and you're practically answering the questions as they come up, and that's wonderful. And I also can watch replays of these webinars on the Internet.
That's right.
And I know that I have to begin complying with the EO clause requirements and Subpart A of the regulations on March 24th, 2014.
That's correct.
Excuse me, the new requirements. We're already complying
right.
with the
EO clause. Okay.
I also learned that individuals with disabilities and disabled veterans have to have their EO notice in accessible format
mm-hmm.
upon request. The Equal Employment Opportunity Notices may be posted electronically for employees off-site, provided that certain requirements are met, that actual knowledge that you mentioned.
Exactly.
All solicitations and advertisements must state that qualified applicants will receive consideration for employment and will not be discriminated against on the basis of disability.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know that D and V are not enough. So
that's right.
Some of us might have to change our practices
mm-hmm.
a little and make that clearer by either using disability or vets or veteran, something like that.
Right.
And we also have to state in our solicitations that we're equal employment opportunity of veterans. And finally, the VEBRA and Section 503 EEO clauses may be incorporated into subcontracts, but only if we meet those conditions that you discussed in the presentation.
Right.
And I can actually go back to the FAQs for an overview
exactly.
and samples of the language I could use to incorporate those clauses.
Wow, Lynn, you are a great student. I mean, you nail everything.
Thank you.
Yes, but I also want to remind you of this. There is no mandatory job listing requirement under Section 503, only under what, Lynn?
DEBRA.
Thank you. Very good.
And it's statutory.
Exactly. Now we're going to turn the presentation over to Ms. Brenda Stewart.
Thank you, Ebony and Lynn. And Ebony, we should be so lucky to have such bright and inquisitive contractors as Lynn. Right now, our panel of subject matter experts will begin addressing the questions that have come in through the chat box. And we have several questions, and we will get to as many as we can. So starting with the first question. With regard to placement of the EO clause on purchase orders, is there a font size requirement, and can the clause be on the back or second page of the purchase order?
This is the Keir from the Solicitor's Office. The regs don't speak to this, so there isn't a font size requirement, and placement on the purchase order is not discussed in the regs at all. The only thing that the regs require is that those two sentences that Lynn read earlier are put in bold text in the contract. So that's the only specification with regard to font that is in the regs.
Okay, thank you, Keir. Also under the new regulations, if a federal contractor is not hiring in a certain location, is there still the requirement to notify the local ESDS that we are a federal contractor and we would like to like priority referrals as well as the contact information for the hiring official or contact at said location? And can you also explain what ESDS stands for?
ESDS is Employment Service Delivery System. And the person asking the question also wanted to know if it's acceptable to notify the ESDS when and if there's a job opening at the site. And it's a good question. And yeah, I mean, the providing this information to the ESDS is really triggered by the job listing. So if you're a federal contractor and you're not listing any jobs, there's no requirement. But once you list a job with the ESDS, then you need to include that information. And then if any part of that information changes, the next time you list with the ESDS, you need to provide updated information. So that's how that requirement works.
So that addresses the second part of that question about whether it's acceptable to notify ESDS when and if there is a job opening. All right, our next question. Regarding the notices we're required to provide to all of our subcontractors, vendors, suppliers, new regs, what does the OFCCP deem as sufficient notice? So will email suffice? Will they need to be actual letters? Do they need an acknowledgement? And is this only on revised or new agreements?
Well, this is Naomi. I don't think in this modern age we're going to require snail mail letters to everybody. Email would certainly be another way that could be accomplished by providing an email. I don't know if Keir has anything you want to add to that, but certainly electronic email is fine, and even a mass email for all of your subcontractors at one time is fine. The point is that they should have some notification that you're a contractor and expect their support and cooperation.
Yeah, no, I have nothing to add to that.
Thanks, Naomi. Do we need to include the EO clause only in subcontracts that do directly for a federal contract, or do we need to include the EO clause in all subcontracts, regardless of whether they do work for a federal contract?
This is Keir. I think this is important. This is where it's important to look actually at the regs and look at the definition of what a subcontract is. And a subcontract, one of the elements of a subcontract is that it's for the purchase, sale, and use of personal property or non-personal services, which in whole or in part is necessary to the performance of any one of the more of the contracts. So that's really that's the catch there. It needs to be necessary to the performance of the contract or it needs to be portion that the subcontractor has assumed from the contractor. So if it's unrelated to either of those, then it falls outside of our definitions.
Okay. Now, the vendor requirements slide, number 15, if you can go to that, Ivan, must indicate on job listing status as federal contractor and desire for priority referrals of protected vets. Must this be in the job description or in the employer profile on the ESDS?
And I mean,
don't speak to that.
Yeah, the regs are silent to that. So we don't have a requirement. I think that this is one of the things that we were trying to do in clarifying the intent of the mandatory job listing requirement was to make sure that contractors are listing their jobs with the ESDS in the manner that they can make use of. And so I think this is another good example of it might be a good idea for contractors to contact the ESDS and see, how should I submit this